Hey there, IndyCar fans. Welcome back to another edition of IndyCar Weekly. I'm Nathan Brown, your motorsports insider at the Indianapolis Star. So happy to be back taping this after 2 years away. Really enjoyed doing this podcast and really happy to be back this season to kick off the 2024 IndyCar season with a special guest host who's going to join me to start this year on a handful of episodes, and we're going to see where things go. I'm joined by longtime IndyCar driver Stefan Wilson, who, as you know, has raced a handful of 500s and is, as we'll get into a little bit later, still working to get back on the grid here sometime. Stefan, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, no, great to be joining you, and excited to kick off the IndyCar season this week down in St. Pete. So, you know, it's as you said, it's been a long off season. Excited to see how all the mixing up in the paddock has really affected the standings. So let's see where it all stands. We'll find out when qualifying hits on Saturday.
So real quick, just kind of to go over things, we're back taping this to kick off this 2024 IndyCar season. You may be listening on your typical podcast platforms on Apple, on Spotify. We are also, if you are listening to this audio only, we're also taping these now. So you can find these on IndyStar's YouTube channel if you so choose. Another fun way to be able to interact with us and get a chance to take in these episodes. We're going to plan to do these post-race, so things will get really, really busy once we get into the summer, but a little bit slower start to the season. So we'll have our next episode out a couple days after St. Pete, and then we'll cover thermal and go from there. But yeah, these we're taping this on a Tuesday of the week leading into St. Pete. We're planning to tape these on Tuesdays moving forward. So be on the lookout Tuesdays or Wednesdays for these to pop up onto your feed. I will certainly be tweeting out links to wherever you want to enjoy these for 30 or 40 minutes or so throughout the season. So let's get started. It's been a busy morning. Again, this is Tuesday, 9 a.m. today. We had Dale Coyne Racing finally, after nearly 6 months of an off season, announcing what we think is most of, if not all, of their IndyCar driver lineup for 2024, between Jack Harvey and Nolan Siegel splitting the number 18 car. Colin Brown, longtime sports car driver and previous in another life, had a several seasons in stock car racing in the trucks and what is now called the Xfinity Series. He'll be a 35-year-old rookie making his debut in IndyCar in St. Pete, and he's confirmed through St. Pete and Thermal. So we will see. Hopefully we'll get a chance to see him race more than those two races. I do presume that Dale Coyne Racing is running that number 51 full-time this year, but for the time being, we only have those two of the 18 events on the calendar confirmed. So we'll see where things go from there. But yes, finally, we now have 27 full-time entries confirmed for St. Pete. I'll be heading there in a couple days. But before we get there, let's dive into a little bit about what has happened around the IndyCar paddock this offseason. Amazing. It seems like this offseason runs so long, and then all of a sudden the season is here. I don't know what this has felt like for you, Stefan. I know you've been out of a car since May, but just as a fan or someone around this sport, any initial thoughts or takes from this long IndyCar offseason since we saw cars on track at Laguna Seca in September?
Yeah, I mean, it's been such a long offseason, but it's been eventful. You know, I think and over the last several years that I can remember, there has been more change in this offseason than in the previous years. Just the amount of drivers moving around, you know, and not just smaller team drivers. We're talking about, you know, some of the guys from Ganassi moving to Andretti, Andretti moving to Junkers. You know, so it's just going to be really interesting to see how these drivers fare in their new environments. You know, so we'll touch on that a little bit in a, later in the show on specific moves. But, you know, I think that's just been what's most interesting over this offseason is just the amount of change. And that's, it's really feeding into the storylines coming into St. Pete, because I just, I feel like there's, you know, there's a bit of pressure on several drivers. They're making these big moves to these different teams, and, you know, we're going to get to really see how they fare in this new environment. So yeah, really,
it's really interesting how, you know, you think of going to a new team as being this great opportunity for a lot of drivers. It's a fresh start. Some of them are starting their IndyCar careers, as we'll get to here in a second, but it's interesting. And again, I haven't been in this position before, so you can speak to it maybe a little bit more, but the thought of, you know, for example, someone like Marcus Ericsson, who was hired by Andretti Autosport, now Andretti Global, by Michael Andretti and Dan Tauris. As I understand it, it is at minimum a 3-year deal. I just wrote a story that published this morning on IndyStar.com talking to Andretti Global COO Rob Edwards. And he confirmed to me, which is the first time that I had heard it laid out this way, that Colton Herta, Kyle Kirkwood, and Marcus Ericsson are all under contract at that team through 2026. So Kirkwood got an extension this offseason. He's there through at least 26. We know Colton got a contract extension. I was believe it was not this offseason, but the one prior, that, if memory serves me right, is through 27. And then it sounds like Ericsson's deal is for a minimum of 3 years. So you've got someone like Marcus now who, after years of being at another top-level team like Ganassi, but a lot of times kind of either fighting for his job or just fighting for his worth in some way, now has this long-term deal where he can relax and maybe in some way shake off some of that pressure. I know drivers like to have some amount of pressure, but the pressure of not knowing what your future is going to be, and it'll be interesting to see how he performs in that. Whereas someone like David Malukas, who we'll get to more in a second, I think he was announced on a multi-year deal, but the way I and I think others understand it is it's a 1-year deal with some options. So if you're someone like him, you're in this great opportunity, but you've got to perform out of the gate in order to keep that big opportunity that you got moving from Dale Coyne Racing to Arrow McLaren alive. So it's interesting to see how those opportunities can feel very similar, going to, you know, two drivers going to a big team. But I feel like those two guys and certainly some others have a lot different things on the table, or a lot different maybe outlook at the start of this year compared to what you might think.
For sure. I mean, it's a case of like, is the grass greener on the other side? You know, I think the Marcus Ericsson situation is going to be the most one I want to keep an eye on. You know, he's going from Ganassi, which is just a powerhouse, you know, the last several seasons just been absolutely dominating the series, to Andretti, who is another top level team, but they just haven't had the same performance that Ganassi's had consistently throughout the season the last couple of years. And I feel like Kyle Kirkwood and Colin Herta, they're the real deals, you know. So, you know, not that Scott Dixon and Alex Blue isn't, you know, but I feel like it's a little bit more focus on Marcus, and we're going to really get to see how he stacks up against these young guns in Kyle Kirkwood and Colin Herta. That's one I'm keeping an eye on for sure. You know, for Marcus, I think it's probably a situation where, yeah, it's relief. He's being a hired gun now, as opposed to the last couple of years. But at the same time, I think there's a little bit of pressure there, I would assume, knowing that he really has to deliver alongside these two hotshots in Kirkwood and Colton. So yeah, I think that's one I'm going to be keeping an eye on. I think the other one that I'm really interested in, you've just mentioned it, was Malukas to McLaren. I mean, that's a significant change for him, going from Dale Coyne Racing to McLaren. You know, it's a shame that we're not going to get to see that straight away with his injury, but I feel like he's someone that can really impress this year. I've always been a big fan of him, you know, or sort of I would admire, you know, I feel like he's done a really good job. And from being in the series, I feel like he's always punched above his weight in Dale Coyne Racing Machinery. So excited to see how he does when he gets into McLaren. Having a few conversations with him, it sounds like the testing he did over the offseason before the injury had gone really well, and he was really excited to show what he can do in the McLaren machinery. And then the other one is going to be Grosjean to Juncos Allinger Racing. I mean, that one, I think, you know, on paper, it's going to be a very fiery, entertaining atmosphere inside that garage area, inside that hall. You know, so, you know, I actually became a big fan of Romain last year. He was one of the few guys that came and saw me in the hospital in May, which just kind of showed me what a class act he is. And so, but you know, he's French and he comes with that bit of flair, that little bit of emotion. So it's gonna be interesting how that mixes inside the Juncos camp. You know, going from an Andretti environment to that into the Juncos Honda Racing camp. You know, that's gonna be interesting. Although Juncos Honda Racing did partner with McLaren at the end of last year, so. You know, it's not going to be as drastic a change for him. It's still going to be a very, very high caliber team that he's going to be on. But, you know, a little bit less, you know, coming after last year, he's definitely got a lot to prove.
There's a lot of interesting comparisons, I feel, almost like a weird, messy triangle in a way, when you look at least starting off this season between Arrow McLaren's full-time driver in the number six, David Malukas, their current driver in the number six, Callum Ilott, who the team just announced literally 40 minutes ago as we're taping this, that Callum will in fact be standing in for the injured David Malukas for at minimum the Grand Prix of St. Pete later this weekend. Malukas out with a dislocated left wrist. I believe he tore a couple ligaments in that wrist, and he had surgery on February 13th. And the release that Arrow McLaren put out after that was that his recovery window is 6 weeks from when he got stitches out from that surgery. So that was February 22nd. So you map that out, and that is right at that first week of April or so. So you can pretty much, I would assume, unless he's been on this miraculous recovery journey. Also likely going to be out for the $1 million challenge at the Thermal Club later this month. So I would presume Callum, given having no World Endurance Championship responsibilities with Hertz Team Hoda, that he will probably be standing in for that race as well. We have not heard that. But what I'm getting at here is Grosjean moved into Ilott's seat. There's a lot of interest around what Grosjean can do in this series. No, now he's no longer with one of what we would consider one of the top level teams at Andretti, that, to be honest, has had a couple down years. Moving to a team at Juncos who has shown some speed with Callum and with Agustin Canapino as well last year, but maybe lacked even a little bit more inconsistency than Andretti lacked at times, although I don't think that their issues were speed as much as execution on race weekends. And then you've got Ilott getting a chance to fill in this weekend for Malukas. I understand that he was certainly one of the top candidates that would have been able to replace Alex Pullo after he decided to stay at Ganassi. In that number six Arrow McLaren ride, I think they may have made an inquiry into his services. And at that time, I think things were somewhat okay still at Juncos Hollinger Racing with Ilott. They held his team option through December of this last year, and so I think they were probably quickly rebuffed on that. They ended up signing David Malukas from Dale Coyne Racing, and then Ilott loses his ride in late October. Obviously, you wouldn't have expected McLaren to wait around for October to see, you know, what might trickle out in the silly season market. But I'm very interested to see how Malukas deals with this pressure of missing these first couple events. We've seen that Zach Brown is not not afraid to pull a trigger early. We saw that with Oliver Askew getting just 1 year in with that team a couple years ago as a rookie. Malukas is not just a rookie. He's got a couple podiums under his belt in his two seasons with Dale Coyne Racing. But knowing that Ilott will be on the free agent market, is on the free agent market now at this point when it comes to 2025. If Ilott has a really great weekend, you know, this weekend, throws together a top five, makes some noise in that thermal weekend, David, yeah, I think will be feeling just that much more pressure to deliver. And absolutely, sometimes that pressure, I think, for a young driver can do some weird things. He's still, I think, just 22 years old. He's, I think, a great driver, a fast driver, a mature driver, a skilled driver, a smart driver. But that is going to be something that I watch when he gets a chance to get back in the car for Long Beach and for the race at Barber and the race on the IMS Road Course before we get to May. I think by the end of the 500, if Malukas is having some up and down results, I would start to get a little nervous. And so that's one of those seats that I feel like even before we get the season started is going to be really intriguing and one of those to watch.
Absolutely. You know, and just, you know, going back to, you know, the Andretti situation, I think it's a really smart move by them, you know, to consolidate, you know, reduce their number to three cars and really focus on trying to deliver consistent performances and not just changes in the offseason for drivers front, but also on the engineering front, you know, seeing Craig Hampson go from McLaren over to Andretti. You know, Marcus could have timed this absolutely perfectly, you know, so going from Ganassi, a powerhouse for several years, you know, delivering an Indy 500 win, almost delivering a second Indy 500 win, and then switching to Andretti, which before now has been very inconsistent. I feel like they've had super high highs and low valleys on the performance side. Now having Craig Hampson there, just bolstering that engineering group, you know, he could have just timed this absolutely perfectly. And that's a situation where I think Andretti is really going to be on the rise. I feel like they would like to see, we're going to see them win races and compete for the championship, especially with that group of drivers. That lineup is very strong.
I had I'll call him a series insider that I spoke with, I think it was late last week, and we were talking about lots of things in the series, but we got to the topic of Andretti. And again, this is not someone that's affiliated with Andretti in any way, just to clear that up. But he told me that he thinks that Andretti's three drivers combined will win more races than any other team in the series this year, and also said he thinks the championship will go there. I don't know that they would be my outright top pick to win a championship, but it's there. I think it's one of those driver lineups that if it is running as good as you think that it could, if some teams, if a team like Penske is still kind of up and down, you know, like Joseph, who won four times last year, still finished fifth in the championship. I think Will finished seventh, didn't win a race. If a team like Aaron McLaren is still trying to find its footing a little bit with Alexander Rossi and David Malukas, if a team like Chip Ganassi Racing obviously still has Alex Palou and Scott Dixon as title contenders, if they are dealing with some growing pains in going to five full-time cars, not to say that I'm expecting any of this to happen, but I think that there is, from a potential standpoint, you might be able to argue that 1-3, that driver lineup is as strong as any in the paddock between, maybe a 7-time race winner in Colton Herta, 2-time race winner in Kyle Kirkwood, who already has an IndyCar pole under his belt just two seasons into his career, and someone like Marcus, who's won on literally the biggest stage, nearly did it again last year, has won four times. Interestingly, has not won on a permanent road course, something that I reminded myself of this year. But yeah, I'm just really interested to see, as you mentioned, Craig Hampson comes on to that team this year as a senior engineering voice who will float across all three of those cars. They've consolidated basically their best human resources across those cars. So they've got no changes among their strategists. They've got three engineers on those teams that have all were all engineers for them last year. Same thing with crew chiefs. They've taken some off of Eric Bretzman's plate, who's the Andretti Global Technical Director, by signing Craig to be a senior IndyCar engineer. There's just a lot of great things.
I'm sold. Like, you know, I was kind of debating this in my head before we spoke, and like, which team is the one to really watch out for this year? And then just me and you going back and forth just now, I'm totally sold. I agree with your insider. I think he's very smart, because I would put my money on Andretti really turning heads this year. I mean, they turned heads last year. You know, Kyle Kirkwood in his second year in the series, and he wins two races on, you know, very, you know, he dominated Long Beach. I mean, he actually put on a clinic, won that race, you know, not by happen chance. He led the whole thing. He was on pole. I mean, it's just like an absolute, you know, really strong showing for him all season. It was the ups and downs that was the problem. And I think having Craig there is just going to solidify things, is going to patch a few holes, consolidating to three cars, is just going to focus the entire group. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, not to throw shade, but, you know, Grosjean at times maybe could have been distracting a little bit inside the camp, you know? So having just Colton, Marcus, and Kyle, I think he's just going to focus the whole group. I'm sold. I think they're going to be the surprise performers this year for sure.
And I think, I mean, just to add on to what that team was last year, it was Colton, it was Kirkwood. You had Grosjean, who, I mean, we saw it literally the first race last year.
So strong.
Can be on pole legitimately in the series. Has not yet won a race, but has the speed to win a race, and just got caught out in a battle with Scott McLaughlin, and they both end up in the tires two-thirds of the way through that St. Pete race. I think had at least one of those cars gotten through that corner, I think that car was going to win that event. So that could have very easily been Grosjean, and had he gone on to go and win that race that season for him, potentially that team this year could look very different. They also had someone, you know, who is still young in the sport, Devlin DeFrancesco, who at this point at least is not back on the grid. And Devlin had some really strong moments, but one of the things that Rob Edwards talked about when I spoke with him for that story that I've referenced previously is that part of what they wanted to do, and actually what they knew they were going to be doing by the time we got to Laguna Seca before the end of last season, was they knew they were shrinking down to three full-time cars. They thought there could be a chance that they might, I don't know if farm out is the right word, but they could have had a technical, either a technical alliance or a partnership with another team, likely someone who was, you know, not presently operating within the sport. And they could have potentially still kept that fourth car, kept that fourth leader circle entry, and just run it under maybe a little bit of a different banner that was a little bit more disconnected from Colton, Kyle, and Marcus. But the goal before they eventually didn't get that fourth leader circle spot that kind of solidified things for the team, as Rob told me, was to get down to three cars, to get three potential race winning and championship winning cars as part of this team. And Devlin, for everything that he did in his couple years, that him and that entry really as a whole just wasn't quite at that same level. And frankly, in Andretti Global, used to be Andretti Autosport, hasn't had, as they've been running four cars for the bulk of these last two decades, has very rarely had, at least in these last 5, 6, 7 years, four cars that you went into a weekend thinking they all had legitimate similar chances to be able to go out and get that win. And so I think when you're in that shop and everyone around you is working on an entry that they think can go out and win a championship or go out and win a race or can go out and put a car on pole, I imagine that has to be really invigorating for everyone in there. It probably ignites even more competitive fire among the engineers, among the crew chiefs, among the drivers, when they feel like everyone is kind of in this together. And I'm really excited to see that.
Yeah, no, I just think in a general sense, it's just going to be more focused. Speaking from experience, you know, being at Andretti when there was, wow, did we have 8 cars at one time at Indy? It was
probably,
you know, we have all the time in the world there at Indy, and the evenings, you know, you could be in a debrief for 2 hours because there's 8 drivers or 8 engineers all talking about what they did today and what was good, what was bad. So it's having numbers is great sometimes, but once it gets too big, it becomes information overload, and you get different driving styles pulling the setup in different directions. So it can be counterproductive. So I just think going down to 3 cars, really smart move by those guys. And I look for them to be strong. And counter to that, we have Ganassi.
I was going to say, speaking of information overload,
5 cars, you know, that's going to be difficult to manage. I feel like if anyone could do it, it's Ganassi, like you said, but you know, it's going to, you know, you got essentially 2 rookies, you know, and Armstrong, and then, you know, the two series champions. So, you know,
they'll have 3 guys running their first Indy 500 in May. Like that's
crazy. That is kind of wild when I thought about that. I, you know, obviously they've got the equipment that they'll be really strong, but like you said, 3 guys have never run the 500. There's an experience that comes with running the 500s that will pay off in the race. So while they might be qualifying up the front, you know, mistakes can happen. So we'll see how they fare, and if it pulls them back, you know, having this amount of cars. I was really surprised they did that, honestly. You know, that was probably one of the biggest shocks for me when I saw, you know, they announced that the extra cars. It's not typically, yeah, I agree, but it's just not typically something that Chip does.
You're right.
Chip, you know, money's obviously important, but even in the past when I've heard of drivers and groups going there to be like, you know, what's it going to take to add cars? Chip's like, I'm not interested, you know. So it's strange. You know, I think maybe it signals where Chip's head is at. Maybe, you know, he's looking to get out in the next couple of years, and he's going to make his retirement aesthetic. I don't know. But that's where my head is going, because yeah, it's just definitely very unusual to see that team swell like it has done over this off season. So, you know, 5 cars, 5 sets of information. You know, if they're smart, they're just going to be, the 3 rookies are really going to be focusing on what Scott and Alex do and try and stay as close as they can, you know, setup wise to them, because you know, obviously Alex and Scott, they know exactly what they need from the car to be fast, and that's the direction everyone should be going in.
It's interesting. On one hand, I mean, something I was thinking about when I was writing that Andretti story over the weekend, the fact that, you know, as I'm reading through these quotes from Rob Edwards at Andretti about, you know, the importance of getting back to having, you know, cars and entries and teams that can win a race and win a championship. And Ganassi just went through this, I guess it was 7 years ago. So they ran 4 cars, I think starting in 2013, if memory serves me right. I was at the end of Dario's career. They added Charlie Kimball and Graham Rahal, I think, alongside Dario and Dixon.
Yeah.
And they went and ran 4 full-time cars through the end of 2017. And I was going back to a story that was written right around that time after that season. And there were quotes from a press release that were talking about how the team felt like it needed to get back to being competitive in every single car that they ran. And they shrunk back, and they had obviously Dixon in that 2018 season. And I think Ed Jones for a year.
Yeah.
And they go and Dixon wins that 2018 championship after, I can't remember exactly what season. I know there was a year in that stretch between Dixon's championship in 2015 and 2018 So it was either 16 or 17 where he finished sixth, which I don't think he's done in like two decades in terms of championship finishes. So I think maybe there was some element to that. It was a weird time in the series where you had, you know, the aero kits. So it was hyper dependent on what engine manufacturer you were with to some level. But they shrink back and immediately Dixon goes and wins the championship and also wins it in 20. Alex wins it in 2021. But by the time we get to 21, they're back at four full-time cars again. But they've won, what, three of the last four championships. Alex won the championship last year in as dominant of a performance as we've seen in this series for two decades in terms of having a guy that clinches the championship before we even get to the finale. Had a stretch there where he won, what, I think four of five races, maybe. So, you have to think, you know, what's one more car on top of that? When you've got guys like Dixon and guys like Pillow, who, certainly with Pillow still feels like Dixon, is at the top of his game. We're coming into a season where a lot is changing. Got half the season running, under one set of technical regulations, a lot of pieces on a new car, a lighter car in a lot of senses. And then you've got, the back half, you know, from the middle of the summer onwards, where we're going to have the hybrid engine package. I think back to 2020, and we all know in such a weird year where the schedule was always changing, practice and testing was as minimal as you could ever have it. And Scott Dixon goes and dominates that championship too. And so he's someone that's on my radar as someone that could, you know, through a bunch of weird circumstances this year, just kind of rise above the rest of folks, adapt and fight. So yeah, I'm interested to see what that turns out to be. I think in a weird year like this, potentially there could, you know, having five cars could be a massive asset when you're looking for data. This car isn't, you know, virtually identical as it had been the last couple of years, pretty much ever since we had added the aero screen for the start of 2020. So when you're looking for as much data as possible, that, you know, potentially that plays into Chip's calculus as he was deciding on things. I think there could be a lot more to it with Kiffin and him being signed as a development driver and having a good amount of backing behind him. But a lot of that we may never really know, but that's, I would certainly say, you know, if I'm looking at the paddock, Andretti and Ganassi and how their top drivers are factoring into the championship, say like past the 500, I think those are two of the most intriguing situations that we have on the grid now. We mentioned the change at Air McLaren with Malukas. Rossi potentially, I think, coming into a contract year where he's got to stand out a little bit to stay safe in his ride, in the number seven Chevy at Air McLaren. Team Penske's lineup unchanged, and we don't necessarily have any indication that anything will change yet coming out of this upcoming season. So I think that's kind of where the attention lies once we are getting.
Yeah, and then Rosenqvist as well, you know, going from McLaren to Meyer Shank. So that's going to be interesting to see that one. He's had a really good few years at McLaren, you know, been very competitive at Indy each of those years. And he's had some decent results, but still, you know, wasn't able to deliver the same level of performance that Pato was. But he was consistent and solid, you know. So moving to Meyer Shank, that's going to be interesting. I can see him having a bit of pressure to deliver this year. And, you know, especially being alongside Blomqvist, who comes over from IMSA, you know. So you know, he's going to be the leader there. And, you know, Blomqvist, I think he's going to be someone that adapts very quickly to the series. And, you know, once he gets his feet under him, I think will impress as well. So, you know, that's going to be having a rookie teammate, but someone that's as experienced as Tom, adds a little bit more pressure because they've got that rookie, you know, tag on them, but he's not really a rookie, you know. The way, you know, the last several years, you know, just dominating in IMSA, you know, in the top class there. So being a driver, that brings a lot of pressure with it, you know, just because you know you can have a fast teammate, but that rookie tag is still on him. So people outside the series kind of view that differently and like, oh, well, he's getting beat by his rookie teammate, you know, that you never want to hear that. So that's definitely going to load a bit of pressure onto him.
Do you think that team has the potential of getting back to that? I think back when Jack was still running for them a couple years ago, they were right around that 12th place in the championship. Do you feel like that team has the chance to get back to that point this year?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it really, they follow along on Andretti's, rise or fall, you know? So I think the strength of Andretti is going to trickle down to them. With the changes that Andretti have made, engineering hires that they've made, is definitely going to affect them. And I would assume they'll be on the rise this year. Elio stepping out of the seat. So you've got, two young, really fast drivers. So, I think they'll up their performance. And it's going to be interesting to see how they develop as a team. Like, when do they take that next step of breaking away from Andretti and just doing it themselves? Because at some point, I feel like that has to come in the next couple of years, you know, if they want to see themselves, as a sole entry and just going up against, going up against Andretti rather than, sort of being tied to them. So, they, at some point in the next couple of years, that's got to be on the horizon for Mike Shank, and then you've got the changeover at Foyt, Foyt's partnered with Penske this year. And that's going to be interesting to see just how that overall group, they had the performance at Indy. They were so strong at Indy last year. Santino came by me in one of the practice sessions and it was just like he was on rails. And I talked to him afterwards. It's like, dude, you have the car that's capable of winning the 500. So, go and surprise a few people. That was my text to him. Actually, he passed me right before I got shunted at turn one. So
that's right.
he passed me and then I watched him just sail by the next car ahead of me. And then that's when I got tagged. So I was in, he sent me a text while I was in my hospital bed and I sent him back and said, dude, you looked like you're on rails. Go and win the Indy 500 and shock a few people. So, they had the performance there at Indy. The rest of the season was pretty bad. So, that upgrade for them going from their own shocks, their own dampers, and then partnering with Penske, that's going to be a huge upgrade for every street course they go to. That's going to pay dividends. Having Santino there, coming from last year, expect to see him much more competitive week in, week out. Stingray Rob got a lot to prove. He's brought a lot of sponsorship with him to that Foyt operation. Comes off a very dismal rookie campaign, at Dale Coyne Racing. So he's got a lot to prove. And I expect he will shine here and there throughout the season. So, I think definitely see a little bit of pressure on him.
I think one thing I've started to notice in the series over the last couple of years is that we're kind of back to more of the same, maybe some last year, but it does feel like, especially coming into this season, maybe outside of Dale Coyne Racing, just because that things came together for them so late. I think they're still kind of trying to figure out in some ways, at least as of, maybe late last week, kind of what their engineering setup was going to be. I imagine just kind of, building out their organization around the 18 and the 51 cars as a whole. So let's maybe put them aside for the second. But the other nine teams in the series, the idea that, I think you probably have, say, outside of Penske, Ganassi, Andretti, McLaren, and maybe Rahal. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt maybe for now, but like those four other teams, I think you all have guys that I would not be surprised to see in a top 10 in a race. And I would also not really be surprised to see outside a top 20 or a top, outside a top 24 in a race. And that we talk a lot about the championship as the season goes along, but the fact that the back of this field is still so strong and competitive is makes these race weekends really exciting, because you could have someone like Santino who maybe goes and finishes 12th for Foyt, and that'll be legitimately a great strong weekend for them. But I don't know that that's like massively surprising, especially when you add in the Team Penske Technical Alliance into the mix. I mean, I think of, you know, Rinus VK on ECR. I think of a Felix, someone you mentioned earlier at Meyer Shank Racing, Santino at Foyt, Grosjean, maybe more so even at Juncos. Like all of these guys, I mean, I would say, I would even go to the stretch that if a weekend goes the right way, I'd say all of these teams have guys that you can legitimately think could go out and win a race if the stars align. Maybe that's a little bit too early for Coyne. Maybe that's even a little bit of a stretch for Foyt, but we don't know what this Team Penske Alliance is going to look like. They were, at least when it came to the 500, Santino was leading laps in the back quarter of the race and finished like a legitimate third place to Joseph and Marcus. So if they can bring a little bit more of that to some other, even just some more ovals across the season, it's so exciting to think how deep this field is. We're not just talking about a couple teams at the top. The couple teams at the top have gotten even bigger over the last maybe 5 years or so in the sport, from a time when we had 21 full-time cars to 27 now. A lot of the growth, oddly enough, has been among those top teams. But I think those teams we would maybe classify as the midfield have gotten so much stronger at a time where it's not very easy to do that in the sport, when a team like Andretti, for example, who dropped a car. Rob Edwards told me they maybe had 85 to 90 folks solely focused on the IndyCar team last year with four full-time cars. They've probably got 75 to 80 still working solely on the IndyCar team this year. So they either lost or shifted 10 employees or so, maybe hired a couple new, had a couple leave for whatever opportunities, but maybe shifted a couple folks over to Wayne Taylor Racing for the sports car arm of that team. But you have teams getting so much deeper, and it's just really awesome to know that we're getting some new young blood on the crew side, on the engineering side, on these teams, that is allowing this sport to still stay as competitive top to bottom as it can be. Now, that doesn't mean that 10 teams are all on the same level, but I think you've got we'll see until next week, but I think you legit have four, maybe even five teams with title contenders on the teams, five, including what Christian Lundgaard might be able to do at Rahal and Lanigan Racing.
We haven't even touched on Rahal at this whole podcast, and they could, and I know they've gone, they've improved their situation a lot. You know, talking to Graham in the off season, he's really excited to see what they can do. And they really came on their stride. You know, late in the year, Graham had a pole at the Indy Road Course. Christian won a race. Did he win two races?
He won a race. I think they both had two poles. So Graham had two poles towards the end of the year. Christian had the pole both at Toronto and the first IMS Road Course, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. So,
Graham got the second.
He had two. Yes, second at the Road Course. And then was it Portland?
No,
he almost did at Mid-Ohio. Yeah. He was like a hundredth or something off of Colton during qualifying there. So, I have to go through and like really think about it, and I'm not going to do that now, but thinking like four poles and one win. I know they had a lot of other mess going on, particularly in the month of May, but like if you told Bobby Rahal a year ago, your IndyCar team is going to win a race this year and have four of the 17 poles for races this year, you would probably take that. And a driver finishing in the top 10 in the championship. I'm sure you'd love to have more, but that has the makings of being a really strong team again. And Graham, I mean, again, we're getting back to 2015 when he was in the top three or four in the championship, but I mean, that team has made some of that type of noise before. And Christian, I think, is the exact type of guy with speed, who's smart in his racecraft, who's experienced, even though he's got only two full IndyCar seasons under his belt. I think he's the type of guy that could factor into that, maybe at that like fourth, fifth level this year, just knowing how strong some other teams are. But
it was really impressive to see what Graham did last year, because a lot of critics were starting to make a lot of noise, you know, post Indy, that, hey, he's just not focused. He's, you know, he's past it. He's, you know, he's getting ready to retire. This might be his last year. I heard all that noise around him. And then he goes out and delivers the performance that he did at the end of the year. And it's just like,
doing things that we haven't seen Graham Rahal do in a long, I don't know what
since the aero kits, you know, since the aero kits went away and the IR18 and then the Halo and the, sorry, the aero screen. Let me get that right. came along. I mean, his performance really took a nosedive. So it was just like, maybe his driving style is just not adapting to this car. But then all of a sudden, they hit on a, you know, the right path with the engineering setup, and he's back to where he was, like you said, in 2015, 2016. So that's another one we haven't really talked about and focused on. But as you were saying, I mean, it's really going into this first race of the season, it's so difficult to know how the pecking order is going to be, because there's been so much change over the offseason. There's been engineering moves. There's been alliances made. So that midfield, as close as it was last year, is probably shrunk even more. And at the same time, we've got a lot of different drivers moving around. So, you know, I've been really sort of focused on this over the last couple of months. You know, I'm still, as of recording this, still trying to do Indy. But looking at the landscape, you know, there is the teams, you know, that have, and the teams that don't have, typically, you know, and last year we saw that pretty evidently. You know, Foyt went from a team that doesn't have to has that extra performance, and you can see it was like a jump in 2 miles per hour average speed in qualifying particularly. And there was a, if you really looked at it, there was about 20 cars that had the extra performance at Indy, that they'd untapped that, you know, from their setup, from the aerodynamics, or, you know, wherever it was in the car that they've, you know, unlocked that. And the have-nots are still trying to find that, you know, trying to discover like, okay, how do we find that extra performance that these other teams clearly have? You know, we were scratching our head at Dry Reinbold, like we, you know, qualified a 231.6, and that felt pretty good. But you're still, you know, a mile and a half away from being really in the mix. And there was a big cutoff line there. There was a big drop from the guys that have and the guys that don't have. Mm-hmm. And over the off season, that list of the teams that have it has grown. You know, because you've got the two cars at Juncos partnered with McLaren now. So you see them all of a sudden gain a couple of miles an hour. They move up from 26, 27th. They're back up in the top, you know, top half of the grid. Then you've got Penske, which, although they won the race, they really didn't have the speed in qualifying. You know, if you look at where they qualified, it was, you know, not typical, you know, not where... they clearly didn't have some of the performance unlocked. So they're getting that with Foyt. So they jump up the grid. So you look at the teams that have it, and that list has grown exponentially to cover 30 cars now. So you've got five guys, there's going to be five guys that are going to be very stressed, that are battling it out really for that last row.
All right, let's take a quick look at St. Pete here before we finish things off. A couple nuggets of note. I just was thinking back to last year, and I know the race certainly did not go as they wanted to between Devlin getting his 29 getting speared before he got through three turns on the first lap. As we mentioned earlier, Grosjean crashing out with Scott McLaughlin. I think Colton had contact with Will Power mid-race that ended his day early. Kyle Kirkwood flew through the air going over the back of Jack Harvey. It was just like a wild race. But before we got to that point, that team had legit speed. And I think that's something we need to remember going into this year. They didn't lack speed. They lacked execution. And that was that's a team I'm looking at coming into St. Pete, kind of on that similar note. They've won that race a bunch of times before, most recently with Colton, I think, in 2021. They had a pole last year. They probably had the car to win the race. That's a team I'm watching. I'm watching Scott Dixon, who's not won this race in its 20 years, which is wild.
That is a wild stat. I mean,
he's won 56 times, I think, in his IndyCar career. And the fact that he's run now 19 times at St. Pete, and it's not been one of those, it's very, very weird. We now know, you know, kind of going through my notes, we now know Malukas is running, or we now know who is running for Malukas, Callum Ilott. And again, Dale Coyne Racing will be running Jack Harvey and Colin Brown in their two cars. Some rule changes on the restarts. Cars have to run single file this year through a predetermined line in or around the last corner, where drivers then can finally start passing. So that's, I think, aimed at trying to prevent some of the messes that we saw in restarts last year, particularly
Laguna.
Laguna was just a mess.
Yeah.
I think it's targeted specifically for that. There'll be some tracks like St. Pete. I don't think of it as being like a big issue for something like that. We maybe more so get messes with guys getting pinched going into the turns one and two, but less so with that. A couple scheduling notes for those of you who will be following along at home. IndyCar this year is practicing with a new practice format where all of the cars will go out and practice the first 20 minutes. They're doing this at least for practice one that I know of. First 20 minutes of all cars, and then they'll alternate back and forth with two 10-minute sessions for both sides, and that depends on whether you have an odd number pit box or even number pit box. So interesting to see if that generates a little bit more running. I know a lot of times, especially in practice one on Fridays of race weekends, we just sit around and wait for guys to go and run. And a lot of times it's just the rookies that have an extra set of tires that are out there running. So hopefully if guys legitimately have 20 fewer minutes to run out there on track, maybe we see a little bit more consistent activity. And then just a quick run through of the schedule this weekend. I believe 2:45 on Friday is your first practice. Saturday practice from 9:30 to 10:30, qualifying 2 to 3:30, a warm-up Sunday morning from 9:10 to 9:40, and then your race starting, I believe the broadcast starts at noon on Sunday, and then a 12:30 green flag for the season opener in St. Pete. Anything else to add on St. Pete that stands out to you as we're getting here in a couple days?
No, not a whole lot. I mean, you know, it's just going to be qualifying is really going to be exciting. You know, like we said, all these changes, there's been testing, everyone's been seeing testing times coming out of Florida when they've been at Sebring, but it's hard to really take all that and kind of know where everyone stacks up. You know, you've got different fuel loads being run, but then suddenly on Saturday afternoon when qualifying starts, when qualifying ends, that's when you're going to know the order, the true pecking order for this year. You know, and you're going to see the guys that were feeling good, maybe also feeling a little bit down themselves, and maybe a few surprises. So, you know, as we've touched on this whole podcast, so, you know, I think a lot to look out for on Saturday afternoon. And then leading into Sunday, 27 cars. It's a pretty tight turn one. It funnels down from such a, you know, wide entry on the runway down into that tight turn one, and then even tighter turn two. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of carnage on the opening lap, you know, but hopefully everyone makes it through cleanly and we can see 27 cars out there really battling it out to see who can take the first win of the season.
Hope so too. Before we finish up, as you alluded to earlier, I know you said that you're still working towards a potential opportunity for May. We won't get into specifics on here, but I know a lot of fans haven't heard or seen a whole lot of you since your accident in the practice Monday after qualifying in the 500 last year. As much as you want to just kind of give folks an idea of where you are health-wise, what you've been up to, and your hopes of being able to get back on track, whether it happens this May or another May down the road.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling great, actually. Yeah, my back injury from May, from getting flattened in turn one, is doing well. It's fully recovered. I'm working hard in the gym. You know, my back's still a bit sore from getting stabbed in the back over the off season, but you know, other than that, you know, I'm doing okay. I'm still pushing as of recording to be out there to have a chance to qualify. But you know, it's just taking a little longer to try and find Summit. And you know, I'm sort of being honest with myself as well. You know, I'm not sure it's going to happen this year. If it happens, then great. If it doesn't, then I'll be still fighting to see if, you know, try and get back out there next year. So it's kind of an odd time in the series. There's a lot of competition for seats. So, you know, if it doesn't happen this year, you know, I'm still going to be pushing hard to get back. You know, I don't want my story at Indy and my career at Indy to end the way it did last year. You know, that's sort of the main focus for me right now is to at least get one more Indy 500. I don't want it to end like it did.
Understandable. I mean, I think every single year, it's always amazing to me when we get to May and I reflect on the entry list that we had the previous year, and without fail, under obviously varying circumstances, but there's always 6, 7, 8 guys, it seems like, guys and girls, who were on the entry list last year who no longer are. I mean, we've got 4, I think, full season or full season-ish rookies in the series this year. I think we have 6 rookies in total who are still classified as rookies in the series. We've got 2 more guys who are making their full season debuts. It's always amazing how much that 500 field specifically changes over. And so I think, for those of us who have followed your career and who know your story, who know your ability of working with a multitude of teams and ways in which you can find a way to get back there. We'd love to have you back. Hope that keeps working, certainly for this May, if that works out, but if not, have to think that there's another opportunity out there for you to get back in 25.
Yeah, no, and I really want to thank Don Cusick and Cusick Motorsports, because they stood by me and tried to get me back there. You know, and I thought I was going to be back with Ryan Reinbold. I really did. You know, typically in most sports, when a driver or a player gets injured, a team sticks by him. So I thought, hey, you know, I did a really decent job, I thought, alongside Ryan. Ryan was happy. So I really did think I was going to end up back there. And then, you know, the team decided on the Dry Rainbow side, decided they wanted to go a different direction. So, you know, I'm now scrambling to try and find something. I anticipate there's only going to be 35 cars. I thought at one point there was going to be 36, but I can tell you right now there's going to be 35. And trying to get into one of those last 2 unspecified entries, so, or undesignated entries. So, you know, pushing, but you know, there's a strong chance I'll be on the sidelines this year, but don't count me out for the future.
We will see. Again, we'll be back next week with another episode wrapping up St. Pete, giving a little bit of a look ahead to the $1 million challenge at the Thermal Club. And whatever other news happens out in the IndyCar world, especially this time of year. I mean, I know for myself, I've got so many stories I've still got to write, some of which hopefully we can talk about next week when we hop on. Again, we'll be taping every Tuesday post-race following IndyCar event weekends this year, recapping those races and giving a little bit of a look ahead for you listeners out there who are craving IndyCar coverage. You can listen to these, if you aren't already, again, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and you certainly can watch these watch and listen these videos of Stefan and I on YouTube or on IndyStar.com. Thanks so much for tuning back in to IndyCar Weekly. So great to have this back. It's been a fun avenue for me to have and been missing it the last couple of years. So great again to have Stefan here with me to kick this season off. And we will look forward to chatting with you guys next week on IndyCar Weekly.